The Amazing Story of Joseph. This chapter is based on Genesis 39 to 41. Meanwhile, Joseph was on the way to Egypt with his captors. In the distance, the boy could discern the hills among which lay his father's tents. He wept bitterly at thought of that loving father in his loneliness and affliction. Ringing in his ears were the stinging, insulting words that had met his agonized pleadings at Dothan. With a trembling heart, he looked forward to the future. Alone and friendless, what would be his destiny in the strange land to which he was going? For a time, Joseph gave himself up to uncontrolled grief and terror. But even this experience was to be a blessing to him. He had learned things in a few hours that years might not otherwise have taught him. His father had done him wrong by his favoritism and lack of discipline. This had angered his brothers and provoked the cruel deed that had separated him from his home. In his character, faults had been encouraged, and he was becoming self-sufficient and demanding. He felt that he was unprepared to cope with the difficulties facing him in the bitter, uncared-for life of a slave. Then his thoughts turned to his father's God. He had often listened to the story of the vision that Jacob saw as he fled from his home as an exile and fugitive. He had been told of the Lord's promises to Jacob, and how, in the hour of need, angels had come to instruct, comfort, and protect him. He had learned of the love of God in providing a redeemer. Now all of these precious lessons came vividly before him. Joseph believed that the God of his fathers would be his God. Then and there he gave himself fully to the Lord and prayed that the Keeper of Israel would be with him in his exile. His soul thrilled with the high resolve to prove true to God, to act as a subject of the King of Heaven. He would meet the trials of his life with inner strength and perform every duty faithfully. One day's terrible calamity had changed him from a pampered child to a man, thoughtful, courageous, and self-possessed. Arriving in Egypt, Joseph was sold to Potiphar, captain of the king's guard. Here, for 10 years, he was exposed to temptations in the midst of idolatry, surrounded by all the pomp of royalty, the wealth and culture of the most highly civilized nation then in existence. Yet Joseph preserved his faithfulness to God. The sights and sounds of evil were all around him, but he was like someone who neither saw nor heard. He did not permit his thoughts to linger on forbidden subjects. The desire to gain the favor of the Egyptians could not cause him to conceal his principles. He made no effort to hide the fact that he was a worshiper of Jehovah. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. Potiphar's confidence in Joseph increased daily, and he finally promoted him to be his steward, with full control over all his possessions. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for bread which he ate. Joseph's industry, care, and energy were crowned with the divine blessing. Even his idolatrous master accepted this as the secret of his prosperity. God was glorified by his servant's faithfulness. He intended that the believer in God should appear in sharp contrast to the worshippers of idols, so that the light of heavenly grace would shine out amid the darkness of heathenism. The chief captain came to regard Joseph as a son rather than a slave. The youth was brought into contact with men of rank and learning, and he acquired a knowledge of science, languages, and public affairs, an education needed by the future prime minister of Egypt. The almost overmastering temptation. But Joseph's master's wife tried to entice the young man to transgress the law of God. He had remained pure of the corruption filling that heathen land, but this temptation, so sudden, so strong, so seductive, how should he deal with it? Joseph knew very well what refusing would bring. On the one hand were concealment, favor, and rewards. On the other, disgrace, imprisonment, perhaps death. His whole future life depended on the decision of the moment. Would Joseph be true to God? With inexpressible anxiety, angels looked on the scene. Joseph's answer reveals the power of religious principle. He would not betray the confidence of his master on earth, and, whatever the consequences, he would be true to his master in heaven. Joseph's first thought was of God. "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" he said. Young people should always remember that wherever they are and whatever they do, they are in the presence of God. No part of our conduct escapes God's notice. We cannot hide our ways from the Most High. To every deed there is an unseen witness. Every act, every word, every thought is as distinctly noted as though there were only one person in the whole world. Joseph suffered for his integrity. His tempter took revenge by causing him to be put into prison. If Potiphar had believed his wife's charge against Joseph, the young Hebrew would have lost his life. But the modesty and uprightness that had characterized his conduct were proof of his innocence. Yet, to save the reputation of his master's house, he was sent to disgrace and bondage. At first, Joseph was treated harshly by his jailers. The psalmist says, "They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons." Until the time that his word came to pass, the word of the Lord tested him. Psalm 105, verse 18, 19. Joseph in prison. But Joseph's real character shone even in the dungeon. His years of faithful service had been most cruelly repaid. Yet this did not turn him gloomy or make him distrustful. He had peace and trusted his case with God. He did not brood over his own wrongs, but forgot his sorrow in trying to lighten the sorrows of others. He found a work to do, even in the prison. God was preparing him in the school of affliction for greater usefulness, and he did not refuse the needed discipline. He learned lessons of justice, sympathy, and mercy that prepared him to exercise power with wisdom and compassion. Joseph gradually gained the confidence of the keeper of the prison, who finally entrusted him with the charge of all the prisoners. His conduct in the prison, his integrity, and his sympathy for those in trouble and distress opened the way for his future prosperity and honor. If prompted by a right motive, every kind word spoken to the sorrowful, every act to relieve the oppressed, and every gift to the needy will result in blessings to the giver. The king's chief baker and chief butler had been imprisoned for some offense, and they came under Joseph's responsibility. One morning, noting that they appeared very sad, he kindly inquired the cause and was told that each had had a remarkable dream, and they were anxious to learn the meaning. "Do not interpretations belong to God?" said Joseph. "Tell them to me, please." As each related his dream, Joseph made known its meaning. In 3 days, the butler was to be restored to his position and place the cup in Pharaoh's hand as before. But the chief baker would be put to death by the king's command. Both events happened as foretold. The king's cupbearer had professed deep gratitude to Joseph for the cheering interpretation of his dream, and for many acts of kind attention. In return, Joseph, referring to his own unjust captivity, pleaded for his case to be brought before the king. "Remember me," he said, "when it is well with you, and please show kindness to me. make mention of me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this house. For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also have I done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon. The chief butler saw the dream fulfilled in every particular, but when he was restored to royal favor, he forgot all about the one who had helped him. For 2 years longer, Joseph remained a prisoner. The hope that had been kindled in his heart gradually died out, and the bitter sting of ingratitude was added to all of his other trials. But a divine hand was about to open the prison gates. The king of Egypt had 2 dreams in one night, apparently pointing to the same event and seeming to foreshadow some great calamity. The magicians and wise men could not give an interpretation. The king's perplexity increased, and terror spread throughout his palace. The general agitation reminded the chief butler of his own dream, and with it came the memory of Joseph and remorse for his forgetfulness and ingratitude. At once, he informed the king how his own dream and that of the chief baker had been interpreted by a Hebrew captive, and how the prediction had been fulfilled. It was humiliating to Pharaoh to consult a slave, but he was ready to do so if his troubled mind might find relief. Joseph was immediately sent for. He changed his prison clothes and was taken to the king. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it." So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Joseph modestly disclaimed the honor of possessing superior wisdom in himself. God alone can explain these mysteries. Pharaoh then proceeded to relate his dreams. Suddenly, 7 cows came up out of the river, fine-looking and fat, and they fed in the meadow. Then, behold, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such ugliness as I have never seen in all the land of Egypt. And the gaunt and ugly cows ate up the 1st cows, the fat cows. When they had eaten them up, no one would have known that they had eaten them, for they were still just as ugly as at the beginning. So I awoke. Also I saw in my dream, and suddenly 7 heads came up on 1 stalk, full and good. Then behold, 7 heads, withered, thin, and blighted with the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the 7 good heads. So I told this to the magicians, but there was no one that could explain it to me. The interpretation of Pharaoh's dream. Joseph said, "God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. There were to be 7 years of great plenty. Field and garden would yield more abundantly than ever before, and this period was to be followed by 7 years of famine. So the plenty will not be known in the land because of the famine following, for it will be very severe. Now therefore," he continued, "let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land to collect 1/5 of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 plentiful years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that are coming, and store up grain under the authority of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. Then that food shall be as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine." The interpretation was reasonable and consistent. The policy it recommended was sound and sensible. But who was to be entrusted with carrying out the plan? The nation's preservation depended on the wisdom of this choice. For some time, the matter of the appointment was under consideration. Through the chief butler, the monarch had learned of Joseph's wisdom and good judgment in managing the prison. It was plain that he possessed superior administrative ability. In all the realm, Joseph was the only man gifted with wisdom to point out the danger that threatened the kingdom and the preparation necessary to meet it. There were none among the king's officers of state so well qualified to conduct the affairs of the nation at this crisis. "Can we find such a one as this, a man in whom is the Spirit of God?" said the king to his counselors. From prisoner to prime minister. Then the astonishing announcement came to Joseph. Inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, all my people shall be ruled, and according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. Then Pharaoh took his ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. And he had him ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried out before him, "Bow the knee." From the dungeon, Joseph was exalted to be ruler over all the land of Egypt, a position of high honor, yet surrounded with peril. One cannot stand on a lofty height without danger. The tempest leaves the lowly flower of the valley unharmed, while it uproots the stately tree on the mountaintop. So those who have maintained their integrity and humble life may be dragged down by the temptations that come with worldly success and honor. But Joseph's character bore the test of adversity and prosperity alike. He was a stranger in a heathen land, separated from his family, but he fully believed that the divine hand had directed his life. In constant reliance on God, he faithfully carried out the duties of his position. The attention of the king and great men of Egypt was directed to the true God, and they learned to respect the principles revealed in Joseph as a worshiper of Jehovah. In his early years, Joseph had followed duty rather than inclination, and the integrity, the simple trust, the noble nature of the youth bore fruit in the deeds of the man. The varied circumstances that we meet day by day are designed to test our faithfulness and qualify us for greater trusts. By sticking to principle, the mind becomes used to holding the claims of duty above pleasure and desire. Minds that are disciplined in this way are not wavering between right and wrong, like the tall grass trembling in the wind. By faithfulness in that which is least, they acquire strength to be faithful in greater matters. An upright character is of greater value than precious gold. Without it, none can rise to an honorable height. The formation of a noble character is the work of a lifetime. God gives opportunities. Success depends on the use we make of them.